Okay, let's think about this for a second. What really drives progress in a community? Is it just about aid, giving things?
Yeah.
Or is something else, something more fundamental, powering it?
That's the core question, isn't it?
Right. And today, we're doing a deep dive into an idea that kind of flips the script on how we usually think about economic growth. It's called market-creating innovation.
And we're looking at it mainly through the lens of Afosa Ojomo's work. He co-authored The Prosperity Paradox with the late Clayton Christensen.
Yeah, and what really grabs you about Ojomo's story is where it starts. It wasn't just some academic theory he cooked up.
No, not at all. It came from somewhere much more personal.
Absolutely. He grew up in Nigeria, right?
Yeah.
And initially, he just wanted out. He saw the U.S. as, the place with freedom, opportunity, things he felt were missing back home. This was around 2000.
Which I imagine is a story familiar to many people looking for, well, a better life.
For sure. But then, maybe 10 years later, something shifts for him. He's reading William Easterly's book, The White Man's Burden. Mm. And he reads this story about a young Ethiopian girl. She spends hours every day just collecting firewood to make a tiny bit of money.
Wow. That kind of daily grind, just for survival,
yeah.
It really puts things in perspective.
It hit him hard.
Yeah.
He felt he couldn't just, stay disconnected anymore. And that spark basically set off this almost decade-long journey.
Quite a journey.
Yeah, he starts a nonprofit, goes to study at Harvard, and eventually works with Christensen on this book.
Mm-hmm.
It just shows deep change often takes real time and commitment.
And it really highlights that his drive came from wanting to find better, more sustainable ways to help people improve their own lives, moving beyond just the standard approaches.
Exactly. And that connects to something Professor Christensen used to say, which I think is really important here.
Oh, yeah.
He'd point out that, look, all our data is from the past, but to make good decisions about the future, we need solid theories. Theories about cause and effect.
Right. Theories help us understand why things happen, not just that they happened.
Precisely. So understanding these different kinds of innovation, which we'll get into, gives us a better framework for thinking about how to actually generate that economic progress we're talking about.
Without that theory, you risk just, throwing things at the wall and hoping something sticks, even with the best intentions.
Okay, so let's dig into this different way of looking at economic growth. Instead of the usual picture an economy as like a list of industries and institutions.
GDP figures, unemployment rates, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Ojomo suggests we should think about it in terms of access.
And that's a really key shift. It moves the focus away from those big abstract structures down to the actual experience of individuals. Mm. Can they access what they need to build a better life?
He paints this picture using three circles. Think of them overlapping. The one in the middle, that's people with the most access. Good schools, healthcare, decent housing,
essentials and maybe more.
Right. Then there's the middle circle. People there have some access, but it might be inconsistent or not quite enough.
Kind of precarious, perhaps.
Yeah. And then the biggest circle, the one on the outside, holds everyone who lacks access to even the basics. Clean water, reliable food, basic healthcare.
And the core idea, the really powerful insight, is that genuine economic development, the kind that lifts whole societies, happens when you enable people to move.
Move from those outer circles.
In towards the center, towards greater access.
And what drives that movement?
Yeah.
He argues it's innovation, but crucially, a specific kind of innovation.
Not just any new gadget or idea.
No, it's innovation that creates simple, affordable products and services. Things designed specifically for the needs of people in those outer circles.
So it's less about giving aid, which is kind of like pushing resources into your community.
Mm, right.
And more about creating opportunities that pull people in. Pathways they can choose to take themselves because it offers them something they value and could actually get.
Exactly. It's a shift from push to pull.
Which leads us nicely into a really critical distinction that Ojomo and Christensen make. They talk about different types of innovation. It's not all the same.
Yeah, this is super important. They identify three main ones. Market creating, sustaining, and efficiency innovations. Let's start with market creating. What is that really?
Okay, so market creating innovation at its core is about making products and services accessible to people who couldn't get them before. Either they were way too expensive or they just weren't available at all in a usable form.
So you're basically creating a whole new group of consumers, a new market.
Precisely. You're targeting non-consumption. People who would use something if only they could access it affordably.
And it sounds like it might take well, quite a while.
Oh, definitely. It often requires real vision and patience. You're investing in something where the returns might not be obvious or immediate. You might need to build infrastructure, educate consumers, create new supply chains.
You're building the whole ecosystem almost.
You really are. But when it works, the payoff can be huge. Not just profits, but new jobs, often lots of them. New skills development, whole new industries can spring up. It opens pathways for growth that just weren't there.
Okay, that makes sense. So how is that different from the second type, sustaining innovation?
Sustaining innovation is probably what most people think of when they hear innovation. It's about making existing products better for existing customers.
Like the next iPhone model, or a car that gets slightly better mileage.
Exactly. You're improving things for the people who are already buying your stuff, making good products even better.
Which is important for businesses, obviously. You need to stay competitive.
Absolutely vital. But its impact on the people in those outer circles we talked about. Usually pretty limited. It doesn't fundamentally change their access.
Got it. Okay. And the third one, efficiency innovation.
Right. Efficiency innovations are all about cutting costs, making things cheaper to produce or deliver.
Like automating a factory assembly line.
Yeah.
Or optimizing shipping routes.
Yes, things like that. The goal is to do more with less, essentially, to streamline processes.
And that can make companies stronger, maybe even lead to lower prices sometimes.
It certainly can, but there's often a flip side. Efficiency drives can also lead to job losses as companies replace labor with technology or find ways to operate with fewer people.
Ah, right. So while it boosts productivity, it doesn't necessarily pull new people into the economic center and might even push some out.
That's the potential downside, yes.
Wow. Okay, understanding those three differences, market creating, sustaining efficiency, seems absolutely fundamental if you actually want to create widespread prosperity.
It really is, because the type of innovation you prioritize has massive implications for who benefits, how jobs are created or lost, and the overall direction of the economy. Leaders need to understand this.
Let's make this more concrete. The book uses the history of the U.S. as an example. It's easy to forget now, but things were pretty rough for most people not that long ago, historically speaking.
Oh, incredibly different. If you go back, say, 150 years or so in the U.S., life expectancy was way lower, poverty was widespread, infant mortality was tragically high. For many people, especially in rural areas, life was just a constant struggle. Limited access to markets, information, healthcare, just a tough existence.
A far cry from the level of access many have today. And then along comes something like Henry Ford's Model T. That wasn't just a new car, was it? It was something.
More. Much more. The Model T is such a perfect example of market-creating innovation. Ford wasn't just trying to build a slightly better car for rich people. His whole focus was affordability.
Making it accessible to the average working family.
Exactly. And suddenly, people could travel further, faster, more easily. The knock-on effects were enormous.
Like what?
Well, think about it. Farmers could get their goods to more distant markets, boosting their productivity and income. Towns that were once isolated started to grow and connect.
Ah. And you need roads for all these cars.
Right. Huge demand for road construction, creating jobs, and then all the supporting businesses, gas stations, repair shops, motels, entirely new industries popped up.
So this one innovation focused on access and affordability just rippled outwards, transforming society.
It pulled millions of people towards that center circle of access and opportunity. And we see similar things happening today, just with different products. The example of instant noodles in Nigeria is really telling.
Right. I remember reading that. Initially, people weren't really familiar with them.
No, it wasn't a traditional food. But the key was they were super simple to prepare, and crucially, they were cheap. Very affordable.
Meeting a basic need, a quick, inexpensive meal for a huge number of people.
Exactly. Someone saw that unmet need, that non-consumption, and created an accessible solution. And again, look at the ripples.
Factories get built.
Creating jobs, stable jobs. Local suppliers start providing ingredients, transport, more economic activity.
And communities get stronger because people have reliable, affordable food options.
Absolutely. So whether it's a Model T in the 1920s or instant noodles today, the underlying principle is the same. Making useful things accessible to people who couldn't get them before. That's a seriously powerful way to build a better future.
It really democratizes progress, in a way.
That's a great way to put it.
This whole perspective really makes you rethink traditional development aid, doesn't it? The book acknowledges the good intentions, building wells, schools, clinics, absolutely necessary things.
Of course. Addressing immediate needs is vital.
But it raises that tough question about sustainability. What happens long term?
That's the challenge. Often, these well-meaning projects can falter over time if there isn't a local economic engine to support them. Who pays for maintenance? Who provides the ongoing resources? Without local ownership and a growing economy, it can be really difficult.
Whereas this pull idea we talked about, where local entrepreneurs offer things people value and can afford, that seems to create a different dynamic.
It does seem to foster more organic, sustainable growth. When people are participating in the economy because they're getting something they need or want, you see local jobs being created. You see local investment happening.
And maybe a sense of pride and ownership.
Yes, absolutely. That sense of agency, of self-reliance is so important. It's less about dependency and more about empowerment.
Which brings us straight to the role of entrepreneurs. The book calls them the heart of strong economies. That's quite a statement.
It is, but I think it captures their essential function, especially these market-creating entrepreneurs. They're the ones spotting those gaps, those areas of non-consumption.
And taking the risk to fill them.
Exactly. It often involves significant risk. But when they succeed, they're not just building a business for themselves. They're creating jobs for their neighbors, helping families become more stable, strengthening the whole community fabric.
It's about creating dignity, creating choices where maybe there weren't many before.
Precisely. And fostering that kind of entrepreneurship, especially in places that are struggling, takes real hope. It takes patience.
And recognizing that things can change.
Right. We need to remember, every prosperous nation today was once developing, once struggling. History shows that the path forward wasn't paved primarily by charity, but by innovation, often driven by local people solving local problems.
So looking ahead then, where should we expect future progress to come from? Is it going to be big tech companies, established players?
Well, based on this framework, the really transformative breakthroughs might come from unexpected places.
How so?
It suggests progress will likely come from people who are closest to the problems, people who deeply understand those unmet needs in the outer circles, people with the vision and, frankly, the courage to create those simple, affordable solutions.
So maybe not from Silicon Valley necessarily, but from someone in, say, Lagos or Lima or Lahore, who sees a problem and figures out an accessible fix.
It could very well be. Individuals who are focused on building something new, something that makes a real difference in people's everyday lives.
Turning scarcity into strength, really.
That's the potential. Taking a vision and making it real,
expanding
access, and in doing so, building economies that are not just bigger, but stronger and more just because more people are included.
Okay, so wrapping this up, the big takeaway seems clear. This idea of market-creating innovation, focusing relentlessly on access and affordability, is a really powerful engine for lasting prosperity.
It offers a different pathway, potentially more sustainable, than relying only on traditional aid.
And for you listening, understanding these drivers, these mechanics of how economies really grow, gives you a powerful lens to view the world.
You can start to see development not just as a problem to be solved by outsiders, but as potential waiting to be unlocked from within.
So here's a final thought to chew on as you go about your day. Where might that next big market-creating innovation come from? What seemingly simple, maybe overlooked need, if met with an affordable, accessible solution, could unleash huge opportunity and change countless lives. Maybe look around your own community with that question in mind.
It's about spotting that potential, the potential in making good things available to everyone.
Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive. We really encourage you to keep thinking about these ideas, about market-creating innovation, how it might just reshape our future.